Word.
Did you beat me?
Hey. I'll barely. I was trying to figure out the web controls like it was my first time.
One day we'll figure this all out.
Dude, like, how many
Probably
years? I know. Like, at this point, nah, probably not at all.
Nah, we're good.
What's going on, man? Okay. What have you been up to?
Oh, I'm just I think it's such a great thing, and I just thought about it. We could talk about it if you want, because I think it's very telling and applicable to just the way the world is going, I guess. And I was just watching a little clip, and I've been kind of thinking about it the past couple of days, where it got brought up on the Joe Rogan podcast, which I thought he wasn't going to be posting on YouTube anymore, and he is, so I don't know how that works, but good for him, I guess. But Joe Rogan in one of his podcasts got brought up that he would moderate a 4-hour debate between Biden and Trump and just them three in a room, you know? And
right.
I thought
I saw that.
That would be awesome. Right. I think it would give a lot of people opportunities to see both sides of the spectrum in kind of a really different atmosphere. And then after that, I thought, man, what a world that we live in that Joe Rogan would even, I mean, it's probably not going to happen, right? But still, even the possibility that it could, because Trump tweeted that he would do it, you know?
Well, and I think Trump tweets a lot of things that,
totally.
That he wouldn't necessarily do or believe.
Good point.
Just,
I don't think either one of them would actually do it, right?
Yeah, who knows? But there's no way Biden would, because they're literally trying to keep him out of the spotlight. Like, that's why
right.
he's hardly doing any talks, because he will screw it up given the opportunity. And if he just doesn't say anything, there's a better chance that he'll win. So
right,
and they know
right.
it, you know. So
totally.
I thought it was interesting that both. Kamala and Biden both said, in a Harris administration with Joe Biden, no, it's actually going to be a Biden administration with Kamala Harris. But they both said it on the same day. And it's like, yeah, are you guys like planting the seeds for what's really coming down the pipe? Because
definitely,
I don't know if we talked about it on this, but I think he's got dementia. Like, I'm not trying to like make a political joke. I literally think he's got dementia.
No, my uncles are doctors and literally said that he does.
Oh, really?
Wow. Beginning Great. Stages of dementia. They said it's like
and he's
really,
gonna have
really
finger
obvious.
On the button. Well, that's the thing, right? It and here's how bad Trump is. A guy with dementia is like beating him in the polls.
Yeah,
Great.
But if you think about
Great.
The polls,
this is our country.
I know, right? And I'm kind of with you. I'm right, you know, in the middle there. But I don't know how much I believe the polls either. You know?
Yeah.
Cause I'm kind of like,
you really can't.
Like, think about it. If someone asked you as you came out, or someone just came up to you and was like, "Who are you voting for?" I mean. You could just say anything. Like, there's no real evidence behind it, right? It's totally, like, skeptical.
Well, and think about
you know?
Who answers those phone calls when they get the call.
Well, that too.
And because it's a lot of questions that they go through, and it's like the guy who's really political and he really wants his point to get across, and so he's, like, you know, answering all the questions. So... Yeah, no, there's definitely bias, but I think obviously after the last election where everyone was like, there's no way Trump can win. And then it was like, oh my gosh, Trump won. Like, I just see that playing out all over again. And the media hates Trump so bad that they're going to do whatever they can to, like, you know, give support to Biden. And I mean,
you know,
that's just what's playing out.
It's just how it goes. You know, what's interesting is I'm listening to, and I've never done it before at all, but listening to an audiobook on Trump. It's called Rage. I guess it's in the news. I don't know. I just was looking for some audiobooks, and it made me think about this election. One of the good things that may come out of it is the amount of people that get out and vote, which either way they vote, right? Because that's been a big problem in the United States for a long time. It's just people voting, right? Which is like at right. the core of our democracy, pretty much, I would think. The book was saying like when in 2016, I was talking about this Republican lady from Indiana or something, and her, people she hung out with just weren't going to vote because they didn't want to vote for Trump. And it made me think about this time. It's like either people are diehard hate Trump, so they're going to vote, or like diehard love Trump, so they're going to vote. So I bet, and Trump's going to love this, especially if he wins, but like, I bet it's a historic like voter turnout for the election, you know, which I guess is good in a way.
Yeah. I think the whole thing is, because I think about the whole voting thing, and you know how there's debate about getting rid of the Electoral College, and I'm like, you know what, I don't think that's going to go the way everyone thinks it's going to go, because, and I could be wrong. I mean, there could be all kinds of unintended consequences. So like, they're afraid that if they get rid of the Electoral College, basically the only votes that are going to matter are going to be the big cities, because they just totally outnumber most of the states. Like, I mean, look at California. We got 40 million people in this state alone. And I'm like, yeah, but here's the thing. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that in California, there are a lot of conservatives that don't vote
yep.
because they know their vote does not count.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing I vote
True.
In California is ever going to matter, because it's California. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I vote for every anti-tax thing or vote against any tax increase, any bond. It still doesn't matter, right? Save the kids! The schools are falling apart! More taxes. Like, every time. Like, it doesn't matter in California. So I'm like, you know, I think there are, like, if all of us, there's no Electoral College, there are more conservatives in California than there are people in most states. And, like, I don't think, like, the liberal mindset and the Democrats have really thought that through. And, like, what happens if all these conservatives actually went to the polls and voted? But, you know, and, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, going back to the Joe Rogan thing, like, how interesting that, I mean, even a thought, like, even getting a tweet out of, I guess that's not saying much, getting a tweet out of Trump, but, I mean, think about how many tweets he gets out of, too, right? But, like, just the fact that, like, Joe Rogan would be in a position to even get that is a testament, if you go way, 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 way down the line, of, like, why you should have a social media presence, why you should like have a YouTube channel, why you should maybe look at starting a podcast, like all these things, it goes at its core, go back to like, wow, this really is like how you get attention. Right. Which is basically right. what it comes down to is how do you get attention? How do you stand out from, you know, the competition? How do you, you know, how do you do that in this loud, right. noisy, confusing, crazy world that we live in that seems to only be getting crazier, you know, how do you do that? And we've talked about that endlessly of, you know, becoming your local celebrity or become, you know.
Yeah. What's the name of that guy who does like the late show, Steve something, not Steve Carell. That's the name that keeps coming to my head, but you know what I'm talking about? He wears the glasses and black hair. Man, I can't think of his stinking name. He
wears glasses?
Yeah. I know he's Catholic. What's his
gosh.
Name, man? It's like
What's
on the
name?
Tip of my tongue.
He but hates Trump, he was, right?
Yes, yes. And he, like, was going after
Stephen Colbert
right before. There you go, Stephen Colbert.
Okay, I saw his face in my head and couldn't think of.
I know, name. Right? You can see his face. Yeah, so I think he was. It was either right after Trump became president or right before, and he was like, he kept going on Trump like every freaking week on his show, just your Hal Roth's show. Like, he just kept going, and finally one night. I don't remember what he said, but I know it was vulgar. It was like really vulgar about Trump. And so Trump finally tweets, you know, Stephen Colbert is awful, horrible human being, but you know, stuff like that, right? You know, as Trump would say. And then they, you know, I'm going to talk to the FCC about having him cut, you know, turned off or something like that, right? All the kind of stuff you could imagine Trump saying. And then the next episode with Stephen Colbert, he goes, you don't understand. For the last year, I've been trying to get you to say my name. I won.
There you go.
Like, it was, there you go. It was so funny. Like, he just, in that one simple line, he owned Trump so well. I just wanted to get you to say my name. And Trump is so easy to walk into that stuff too. So I mean, it was totally funny to see that.
Nice,
but yeah, you know, having the YouTube channel and telling your story and all that stuff, man. I mean, and that's actually one of the things that I was going to bring our talk back around to. I'll wait till we get into it, but. Telling that story is so important.
Totally.
You win people.
I mean, we could get into it right now if you want.
Go for it. Yeah, tell them what brought it up.
Wait,
the
I got
picture.
Oh, the picture that I sent you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if we were going to go there. I'm glad we are. So.
You're wondering, how am I going to bring back to telling a story? Don't you worry. I will.
I was like, wait, what story? Huh? What? Squirrel. So I was taking a pee the other day, and I happened to glance down at, we ran out of toilet paper, and so we had the package of toilet paper in the bathroom, and I happened to glance at the back of it, which I really never do, and it had like a free offer on the back of the packaging that the toilet paper came in. Like, okay, this is like, what is that? You know, it kind of caught my attention as we talk about them. Same with you. You're kind of always looking for differences and outside of industries and all that. And so I looked at the toilet paper packaging and it said free roll extender. All you have to do, and forget, let me look at the picture again, but basically all you had to do was send in your proof of purchase at Charmin.com or call them, and they would give you a roll extender so that your roll of toilet paper would fit. So it actually says it has the roll fit guarantee, and this is a perfect example of like making up your own thing and then being the king of that thing, right? So they created their own guarantee, the roll fit guarantee. If not satisfied with your Charmin roll fit, send original receipt, UPC, and completed online form within 60 days of purchase. Is that the right? They have that guarantee so that you can get the roll extender. I read it wrong. I thought it had to do with the roll extender, but basically they'll make it so your roll fits. And I just took it as like, that's their selling point. It's like, our roll is so much bigger, it's not even going to fit on your freaking toilet, like your toilet paper holder. Thought it was pretty funny.
And see, what I thought was funny is when you like voxed me about it, you were like, you know how everyone says, you know, we got the biggest roll and ours is the softest. And I was like, dude, you're totally right. Like, every freaking toilet paper out there, they all say the same thing. Like, I literally just Googled toilet paper and I'm looking on the images, you know, 12 mega rolls equals 48 regular rolls. And that's what you're buying when you buy the Cottonelle. Charmin, 12 rolls equals 48. Mega, ultra soft. Charmin, ultra soft. Then you got Scott, which is like so not soft. They're just like, hey, we got 1,100 cubes on our roll. They're those little squares.
What's like funny is I don't even like the toilet paper. I think it's horrible. That's what's really funny. I don't even like it.
Like the only one here that really is unique. So when everyone is claiming the same thing, hey, we got the biggest rolls, we got the softest rolls, it's just white noise to everyone. And like as I'm looking here on the Google Images, the only one that even has a unique selling proposition, at least on these images, and I'm sure there's other people who've copied it, is Scott's got rapid dissolving made for RVs and boats. So I could actually see that as a unique selling proposition for RVs and boats because, you know, they need it to dissolve as much as possible in their own little tanks, right, before it gets all offloaded. So that's a unique selling proposition. But everyone else, like for your home, like literally, here's another one. 12 rolls equals 24, double. Kirkland doesn't say anything on there. So I guess they're just like, hey, we're Kirkland. You buy it because it's Costco.
Right.
Like there's nothing unique. So I thought it was really interesting when you like, I'm like, yeah, dude, send me the picture. I want to see this thing. What I would have done a little bit differently, though, is I probably would have put it on the front, not just on the back. Like, I don't know if they had anything on the front. You want to use it to sell more. So if you're trying to convince everyone, hey, this is the biggest roll you're going to have, we'll even give you a roll extender. Like, that tells you they believe they've got the biggest roll out there. Like, no one's got a bigger roll because you might actually need a roll extender and they're going to give you one. So,
and something
I would
to point out
that
we could,
on the front.
Totally. And something to make note of, I don't know how important it is, but, you know, think about it. Charmin sells through essentially distributors, right? They're grocery stores and whatever. So they don't really have that, like, direct-to-consumer, like, channel, I guess. And right. So they're collecting right. all your information at the same time, right? So and they might just store it. And if they ever wanted to reach out to you, they got your address, your email, you know what I mean? They got all your information too. I don't know if that's pertinent, but you never know.
It's a great idea for that. The problem with these big companies, like, I don't know who makes that, probably Procter & Gamble, because they make most everything. They usually don't do anything with it. Like, their model, right. like you said, is we sell through stores. So it's kind of like, you know how when you fill out those like warranty cards and you mail them in so, you know, you can get your warranty and stuff.
Yep.
All the companies do is, yeah, okay, great. Now we've got this person and they put them in their system for the warranty. But then they do something called renting those names out. So you can rent names. You go to a list broker. There's actually a book called SRDS. I think it stands for Standard Rate Data Service or something like that. And every public library, not every branch, but every public library usually has one because they're like $1,000. They're multiple books. And so, like, I would go to the Long Beach Public Library because they've got one there. And then there's one, like, deep Orange County. But when you look in there, you can see every list in probably the world, but definitely the nation, that you can rent. So if you want everybody that just subscribe to Forbes magazine because you think that would be good, you can actually go rent that list and then you could send them your marketing letter. And so great marketers, that's what they do because they know that when someone buys something, they're usually inclined to buy something else in that same vein. So, you know, I'm just using Forbes as an example. Okay, if someone just subscribed to Forbes, well, let's send them some investment newsletter. To get them to subscribe to our newsletter because they just subscribed to Forbes, so they might subscribe to this newsletter as well. And And so that's what they're doing with that data that they collect, is they're like, oh, cool, we can make an extra, you know, 2 to 3 cents a name by renting that out to different people. And it's called renting, not selling, because you're only, like, when you buy it, you're only allowed to use it one time unless you pay for multiple uses and stuff like that. But it's kind of funny. Like, that's all the big companies see when they collect data like that. They're not thinking like we are as marketers. Hey, I'm trying to build a list that I can go back to and get repeat business. They're going, hey, I'm going to build a list so I can turn around and run it to other businesses. It's really weird.
Crazy. Just, I guess, an old school way of doing things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is old school, but it's actually very, very powerful in today's market. Like, you will make more money off of direct mail than you will off of social media, especially right now, because
even still,
like,
huh?
Look at your own mail. Yeah, dude, it's crazy. Like, on social media, think about all the ads you see when you flip through your Facebook feed or your Instagram feed. I mean,
right.
They're all over the place. But think about your mail. You get, like, right now, you know, I get maybe 4 to 6 pieces of mail. I mean, during COVID, there were actual whole days when I got nothing.
Like, oh, really?
No mail came in. Oh, it was weird. I'd never had that happen in my whole adult life. And, and it's like, okay, if you use direct mail now and you know how to use it properly, you'll actually get tons of business, because you're competing against, like, nobody. There's hardly anyone else doing direct mail. So direct mail is far, far from dead. On with detailers, I don't know that you have to do direct mail to be successful. Like, I would just tell detailers, yeah, you can go that route, but we already know that if you run Google ads at like $5 to $10 a day, you're going to have more business than you can handle. So just go to where your life is easy. Run a Google ad, right?
Totally.
I mean, that would be the easiest thing. Yeah.
Right.
Because you already know those people are looking to have their car detailed. They're looking to the point that they're actually searching online to get help for that. So, yeah. I mean, that's what I would do in that situation. But I was just thinking about the whole thing, like, as it comes to toilet paper and therefore, you know, as it comes to marketing anything, how important it is to have a unique story that you can tell people. And, you know, you got all these toilet paper people who are like, you know, we're the fluffiest, you know, we're the softest, we're the biggest roll. And they're all basically saying the exact same thing. And I think we've brought this up on the call before, but years and years ago, the way that Schlitz beer became the number one beer in the country, they were like dead last, is they put out a commercial in which they told the process of how they made beer. And I remember the marketer, as the story goes, the marketer was like talking to the owners. He's like, we got to tell this process, you know, how you filter the water and whatever the heck else they do. And the owners were like, yeah, but that's what everybody does. That's how beer is made. He goes, yeah, but no one's told the story. So if you're the first to tell the story, then you're the one that's doing it and everyone else is copying you. And so they did it. They told the story. They went from being last to like the number one beer in the nation. I mean, Schlitz beer, it's like not even a good beer, right? Sorry if I offended someone. That's like their brand. But, and then like you cut to today. So it's been decades since they did that. And I don't watch much TV commercials anymore, but I remember a few years ago, Samuel Adams was doing the exact same thing. Right. They're like, hey, here's our hops. And, you know, we do more with hops than anyone else. And this is how we make it. And they're telling the story of how they make the beer. They don't do it any differently than anyone else, like at all. They're just the first ones to tell the story in decades. But no one remembers what Schlitz beer did. And, you know, that helped propel Samuel Adams up to being, I don't think they went to number one, but they're one of the top beers in the nation. And that all that stuff kind of helped. And it's the same thing when it comes back to detailing. Like we've talked about before, anybody with a bucket a sponge and a Q-tip can call themselves a detailer. But when you start to tell the story of, hey, this is how we care for cars, and it could just be as simple as you do a video on it, you post it on your social media, and like you get a new client, hey, by the way, this is what I do to cars. This is what makes me different. And like for me, that's what I would do in my financial planning business. I just send people the video. Like, I'm not going to repeat myself over and over again. I just send you the video. Like, here's what I do in financial planning that makes me unique. And you do the exact same thing in detailing, even if it's the exact same thing that every detailer in the world does, because you're the one telling the story, everyone else is just copying you. That's what it looks like. So that telling of the story is just, it's so important in business, so important in detailing, so important in everything. Just tell the story.
100%. I think we talked about that a little bit last time. Just tell your truth, and it makes it so much easier too. You know, you're not fabricating anything. It's like, I think I mentioned it again or last time too, but like what you're doing on your Instagram, it's like, you're just recording your workouts. Like, you're working out anyway, you know. For a detailer, it's like, you're doing the car anyway, you know, just
exactly
record it, just show it, you know. And people worry too about, this is one of the things I really do like about what Gary Vee talks about, is people do worry about it being too polished and too kind of, you know, because it is, it's kind of not embarrassing, but it's vulnerable, right? To record yourself and a little awkward and right. Whatever. But people actually like it. The rawer it is, the more people like it because they can connect with it, you know? So it's, tell people too, like, don't worry about not being polished or not, you know, not being perfect. You'll actually resonate with more people, you know. At least I think.
Yeah, no, definitely 100% on that. I mean, it is not about, I try to get this across to my real estate agents all the time when I'm training them, because I'm trying to get them to do videos, but real estate agents really don't like doing videos. And I'm like, look, it's all about authenticity. Like, the more authentic you are, yep, which is literally using your phone, like, don't get some fancy camera. And I'm like, right, there is a time and a place to get the fancy camera. Like, for them, I'm like, look, if you're in the luxury market and your competition has really nice drone videos and, you know, they spend money on each one of their videos, then you're going to have to play at that level. Like, you got to play at the level of your competition or a little bit better. In the detailing world, there's no one doing that. You don't even need to worry about that. Like, that's
right.
Forget it. You just need to worry about being authentic. So like, here's the structure that I tell people to use when creating videos. So the very first thing you do is you give them the hook, and you're going to tell them, this is what the video is about. So like, I'll use a Jimbo example. I have no idea what structure you use for your videos. I've seen some of them, but I honestly can't remember. But like, you do the cheap versus expensive. So if I were to do, you know, what'd you say? It was one of those foamer things, right? Wasn't that one of your better videos?
Yeah, foam cannon. Yep. Yeah, my foam most cannon, popular
right?
video ever. Yep.
So the hook in that case would be, in this video, I'm going to address whether this 1999 foam cannon from Amazon can perform just as well as this $99 foam cannon from whoever, right? So that's the hook. So everyone now knows, okay, that's what this video is about. And so if someone wants to know about that, then they're going to keep watching. If they don't, then they stop watching, right? Because it's like, I don't give a rip about that. And that's fine. You don't care the people who aren't interested in your topic. You only care about the people who are. So you're trying to attract the right people to you. So that's the hook. Then you would go into what I call the personalization, or you're just going to basically announce who you are. So what a lot of people do is they'll start it off. They're going, hey, this is Pete Mitchell with Pete Mitchell Detailing. Well, no one cares about you. So we don't start it with you. We start it with the hook. So I'm going to go over these foam cannons. Hi, I'm Pete Mitchell with Pete Mitchell Detailing. So now I've introduced myself. Then I go into the content. And in this example, you know, however you would show a foam cannon. I have no idea because I've never used a foam cannon, right? But, you know, you would show them, all right, you know, now I'm using this one, I'm using that one. You do all the stuff that you do. And then what I would do as a detailer, at the end, you do the call to action. So you always want to have a call to action because we don't want to just educate people. We're in the business of generating leads. Like, we want to get more business. So it's hook, personalization, content, call to action. And your call to action could be as simple as, hey, if you'd like to get a quote to have your car detailed, take pictures of your car and text it to, and then give them your phone number to have them text it to you. And I'll get back to you with a quote. And if it makes sense, we'll go from there, right? Something really easy. Obviously, you could do the consumer guides that we give you guys to use. That's always an easy one to use as a giveaway. But realistically, in detailing, I'd probably just say, hey, look, you know, if you'd like me to, if you'd like a quote on your car, then just send me a text with some pictures of your car, and I'll be happy to give you a quote. And it would be a really simple call to action. And you start putting out little content like that, like, you know, hey, in this video, I'm going to show you what it's like to do a ceramic, or what your car is going to look like after a ceramic coating is done. Right here, I've got this Porsche 911. Hi, I'm Pete with Pete Mitchell Detailing. And boom, then I'd go into it, do the ceramic coating. Then at the end, hey, if you'd like the quote on getting a ceramic coating for your car, go ahead and send me a text, some text pictures of your car to this phone number, and I'll be happy to give you a quote. And really simple.
And we have that. We have it easy for people to do. Automated, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They could do the whole SMS conversations for it. They could literally just use their cell phone for it. I mean, whatever makes it easy for you to just implement it, that's the key. But again, you know, those four steps, it's hook, personalization or your introduction, content, call to action. Simple as that. Like, that's just how I do all my videos.
And with that framework, with that framework, it's kind of like the cheap versus expensive framework. When you, I think we've talked about this before too, but it makes it, if you have a framework that you work within, it also, so you have the framework and then you have just your story, right? So you have everything you need to create content that actually is extremely beneficial, you know? So then you're not sitting there, like sometimes, it happens to me often where I'm like, what do I want to do a video on, or what should I do, or what should I plan? And it's like, well, yeah, it's simple. All I got to do is find a cheap product and an expensive product, and then I'll just show it. Like, no big deal. It's very easy. And sometimes, because I think you naturally, at least I do, want to like get better. So sometimes though, I make it more complicated than it needs to be. So for me, it's very helpful to just be like, hey, it's just cheap versus expensive. Like, it's not a big deal. You know, just find an expensive product and a cheap one. You know, the problem has become for me too, is that I found like Turtle Wax happens to usually always have like the cheapest products. And so it can get like, oh my gosh, another Turtle Wax video. Like, are you kidding me? You know, so that you do run into some issues, but that's at least down the line. And there's plenty of products, but still, once you find kind of a little, you know, something that works and is cheap, it's kind of like, oh man, kind of found the end of the road here. At least you think, and then you start doing other stuff. So anyway.
Hey, when you did some of your videos on the cars that you're detailing, like when you did the ceramic coating on my car, and I think, I don't remember if you did a video on the Mustang pre-sale detail. How did you set up your camera? Do you put it on like a tripod, or how do you actually do the setup?
So when I did your Mustang and I just did a little blurb about the pre-sale detail, I'd forgotten I used to carry my camera around with me. And I had forgot it that day. So that's just my phone. There's a couple, tripods are really good. That's what I use the majority of the time. There's also like a mini tripod called the Joby, J-O-B-I. And I used to use that a lot because the legs of the tripod, you could like wrap around things. So sometimes the tripod, I couldn't, if I'm working in a car, it would be really like difficult to get the tripod in an area that I wanted. So I used to carry around that Joby thing a lot, because what I could do is say I was doing something on the inside of the car, I could roll the window down of the car and crack the door open and then wrap the tripod around like the door frame of the car essentially, and have the camera right where I wanted it. So it was a little more, gave me a little bit more flexibility, with where to put the camera. As you get into it, it's like, oh, the more toys I have, the better it is for, I may come across, you know, a random situation where I need this one thing that costs $200. You know what I mean? So that's where I try to keep it simple too. But I would say like now, because I have a shop, it's 99% of the time it's just on a tripod, you know,
and that keeps it easy. I know you've got like a film guy who helps you. Do you still do videos where it's just like your phone? And if you do, do you use a mic for your phone, or do you just like, I'm not even going to worry about that?
I don't really do that anymore. I probably should more. Sometimes I do videos on my own, but I'll use my camera, and then I use a wireless lav mic.
Gotcha.
I did have, but it's harder now because, which they probably have an adapter, but in the beginning, Rode had a wired lavalier mic that I would plug into my phone. And that sounded pretty good too. If you had an iPhone, you just have to get an adapter, because it was a headphone jack plug. That worked really well. But you know what? Now the phone, that was probably 2 or 3 years ago, the phones are so dang good now that as long as you're not eating like a bag of Cheetos or like opening up something, even outside, you can get pretty good audio, even out of the phone without headphones. A lot of times I'd use headphones too, and that helped a lot. The phones are so good right now, you know, and only getting better. It's crazy. So I would encourage anyone to not let that be a deterrent. What I was watching someone's YouTube video. I don't think it was detailing related, and I thought it was a really good video, and they panned over like in front of a mirror, and I was like, oh wow, he's just using his phone. I was like, wow, this is pretty good. You know, for just a phone, you know,
right.
So yeah.
That's cool.
So just the phone. I try to not let anything hinder me, because I will just, if anything hinders me, I just won't do it. So I try to make it as easy as possible, you know. Shoot, even a lot of my podcasts that I've done, or how I created the daily detail tip, was I convinced myself that I could talk for a minute about anything. And so I said, just talk for a minute. That's it. And you'd be shocked how fast a minute goes when you start talking.
Yep.
You know, and I need to do that more often. Just the daily detail tip. Quick tip, 1 minute long, you know, recorded usually on my phone.
Yeah. You know, see that,
in between appointments.
That helps establish a detailer as an expert. Like,
yeah,
just those little things, right? Even if you're never going to be the next Jimbo, right? Meaning, you know, Jimbo's got
the bar's very low.
A detailing podcast. Well, but you've got the podcast, you've got the YouTube channel. Like, even if you're like, no, I don't, that's not my thing. I just want more detailing clients. Like, even just having a 1 minute tip that you could put out on a podcast. I mean, it's like those little things. Put it out on your social media. And again, you know, if someone's like, why should I hire you? Well, here's what you need done. Boom, boom, boom. Let me send you these videos real quick. Or let me, you know, give you the link to these 3 episodes of my podcast. It's like, okay, well, this guy is clearly the expert. So
totally,
he's the guy.
And you'd be... You would be so surprised like the people's reaction, customers' reaction when you tell them like, oh, I have a podcast or, oh, I have a YouTube channel. Like it's automatically, they're like, really? That's wow. Like you go that deep into this industry. Like that's crazy. They don't ask like how many subscribers or like how many downloads do you get? They don't, it's just the fact that you have it is like, wow. And I will say, yeah. I guarantee you that the majority of people, and I do this myself, they will already know that you have a podcast or a YouTube channel before you even tell them. And for example, like that's how, oh gosh, what did I, oh, I hired a new tax person to do my taxes. I did it my own a couple years and then hired someone, whatever. I literally found this guy through an Instagram ad and then did a bunch of research through his social media before I felt comfortable even calling to like set up a free consultation. And I noticed myself doing that more and more often where I will kind of slightly vet the person before I even call them. And I would think that other people are doing that too. You know, because it's so easy, right? It's so easy to check out people's social. It's so easy to see what they're up to. Are they active on it? Are they not? You know, and kind of make these preconceived judgments, as bad as that sounds out loud. It's like, you do, you know? And then you decide.
Well, think about
it
like this. When was the last time you went to a restaurant, a brand new restaurant that you'd never been to before, and you didn't check Yelp?
Never.
Like, that's the generation we are today. We check.
So that's a great point, and it makes me think, it makes me think of something even beyond, like, a review, and I think this is one area that at my new shop I'm trying to focus more on, and I think is very, very, very important, very, very important. And so this past weekend, I had to drive up to Tehachapi. You know where that is, Pete?
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
no idea where it was.
Unfortunately.
Oh, you do? Okay. Got it. I had no idea where it was. I'm like, is that even in California? Where is that? Anyway, yeah, unfortunately. It's actually, I think, nicer than, like, Big Bear. But whatever, if you're into mountain towns. Anyway, we had to drive up to Tehachapi. Heather, there was a wedding up there for my sister-in-law. Heather was doing the makeup, and so I had all day while Heather was doing makeup to kind of explore around. And luckily my sisters were, I didn't have any kids with me, and my sisters and mom were up there with me. And my sisters are really into like coffee shops and checking out places. And so I was paying attention to how they found a coffee shop to go to. And it's straight. Like, what is the look and feel of the coffee shop? Like regardless of the reviews, they look at the imagery of the coffee shop. Is it their style? Does it look trendy? Does it look cool? Where is it? You know, and we drove 45 minutes away. We actually went to two different coffee shops. One, the line was just too long, so we ended at another one. But we drove about 40 minutes away from where we were staying to go to a coffee shop because it looked cool. And my sisters wanted to take a picture out front of it for their Instagram. How wild is that? You know, of course. Of course they did. But I thought about it, and I'm like, wow. Like, I didn't even look at the reviews for it, and it was over in Bakersfield. But it was a cool coffee shop. It was whatever. I don't know if I would have driven 40 minutes for it here. But I'm like, wow, they went strictly based on, like, how it looked, their social media, and how it would make them look if they posted about it on social media. And it's like, wow.
That's the power of images, man. Yeah.
Cool. And that for detailers, it's like, you know, the default for detailers and imagery is cool cars. Right. And so, but if you can make either your mobile rig really cool, and so you have like built in content that you could take pictures of, or like your shop, kind of design it, maybe even have someone come in. That's what I'm trying to do, is have my wife kind of spruce it up and design it a little more than I can, because I'm definitely not artistically inclined. But imagery is, I think, really, really important, and even becoming more important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, just being able, like, if you're like, hey, I'm not really good at, you know, doing Photoshop, whatever, like just do simple before and after photos of the vehicle.
Totally.
Here's what it looks like before. Here's what it looks like now. Like yeah. That tells the story right there.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
Cool.
Agreed.
Well, if anybody's got any questions or comments on any of the stuff that we've talked about, go ahead and put it in the Voxer group. I'm going to have Travis get this up on the website as soon as he can. It'll either get up later today or tomorrow, and we'll get it all taken care of. Any final thoughts,
Sweet.
Jimbo?
Nope, that's all I got.
Cool. All right, guys, we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Like I said, if you got any questions in the meantime, just go ahead and shoot them into the Voxer group, and we will talk with you there. Take care, everybody.
Cool. Thanks for your time, Pete. See ya.